And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 122. We're back. We got Fab last week because it was opening day. We have a weekend of games in the books now, a little more feel good, bad, ugly, depends on how you want to look at it for the baseball world we're living in. But it's fun to have baseball every single day, a lot of day games these days, which is great as well. We'll get into all that and more. But first, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. My co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great, man. Getting back into the in-season groove. Actually spent the weekend up in Seattle. Caught the Mariners-Red Sox game with my dad and my four-year-old. It was their first Mariners game. So
that's awesome.
It was pretty sweet. Beautiful day. Game was like 2.5 hours. My first game with the pitch clock. And I know you were telling me, like, it's great on TV and in person, and I found this, it was fast. Anytime we go get anything to eat or whatever, or get a beer, it was an inning. It cost you an inning. But for my four-year-old's attention span, that's probably exactly a good thing. But no, we had a great time. He had a little Julio. You got a little Julio jersey.
Nice.
So maybe I'll feed him my little box of Julio cereal that used to be a prop behind me. Did pick up a prop behind me.
Yep.
So behind my left shoulder, I picked up the WERF, the Western Expanse Roto Fantasy. Basically, the Northwest version of these Earth leagues. I won the league last year, and last year's champ lives just in South Seattle. So picked that up. Picked up some Mariners gear and had a good time along the way. So
perfect.
Good weekend for me.
Yep, saw the pictures. Saw your son wearing, I think, a hoodie also. Like, he's
a little chilly.
Yeah, he was ready to rock and roll. It was a good looking day. I even saw a good big Raj sitting there with a beer in hand.
He was there. Oh yeah,
yeah. The Bloomfields were in full force. Looked good. Looked good.
Thank you. Yeah. How was your? And that was our Easter. So I kind of made the joke that T-Mobile was our church.
Yeah. Mine was good. Yeah, we do a Saturday night more adult Easter, but there's so many kids now it's not really adulty anymore. And then Sunday is all for the kids with the barbecue and Easter egg hunts, and they have a tricycle/bikes depending on age races and all kinds of stuff. So it was a full day, full weekend. It was a lot of fun. I'm tired, but it was a lot of fun watching, as you know, and others that have children, as they grow up and things start to become a reality to them, it becomes more interesting. And I'm already nervous for Christmas this year because my little one, usually she wakes up between 6:30 and 7, lately more towards 7 since the time change. Nope, she walked into my room at 6 a.m. on Sunday, and the first thing out of her mouth, it's usually, "Good morning, Daddy." It was, "Where's the Easter Bunny?" That was her question. And I'm sitting there like, man, am I in trouble this year? Like, things are starting to become a reality. I kept having to tell her why we were putting it off till later in the day. I'm making excuses up. But so she thinks where we went for the party, where she's gone every year of her life and not realized it, was the Easter Bunny's house, is what she thinks. So that'll be a cruel reality someday. But yeah.
Yeah, you can worry about that in a couple of years. Yeah. Worrying about Christmas already. It's April 2nd, man.
Well, just how like into it she already is. Like, I'm scared if she's going to start doing the whole Santa Claus thing, it's going to get a little wild. But yeah. To be fair, it's April 2nd. We should be worrying about more important things like ratios and,
and fab
and standings and like all kinds of cool stuff.
Injuries.
So that's way more important right now. That is 100% correct.
We should be worrying about, I'm just going to get ahead of it now, of the elephant in the room. We should be worrying about our mascot.
Yeah.
The MIA, Luis Rengifo, which is just, yeah, let's play Aaron Hicks. I know he homered on Monday or Tuesday or whatever, but Miguel Sano.
That's where I'd be going. You can play Aaron Hicks if you want. Miguel Sano.
You can even play Rendon. I don't care, but like Rendon leadoff, Hicks, Sano. Like, come on.
Yeah. Rendon went hitless to start the season. Not sure how he did on Tuesday, but I'm guessing hitless as well because that's what he does. Like, someone made a great joke. Maybe Rendon is doing his best to get demoted so he doesn't have to work and still get paid. That would be kind of funny. Wouldn't surprise me with Rendon, but he's so bad. You got Sano. It's just a conglomerate of what are we doing? And people say, well, Rengifo's splits. I don't care. When he got to play every day, his splits weren't that bad. Let the kid play. I say kid because we both discovered how young he actually 26. Was. Yeah. Like, what are we doing here, Ron Washington? He said he wanted to let the team run more. Well, that's one of your best guys that can run, and you have him sitting on your bench. Yep. So, yeah, it's full tilt mode. It's bad.
Official podcast statement. We stand behind our mascot, and we are officially an anti-Ron Washington production.
And if Rangifo would like to come on our show, a la Jazz Chisholm, on another show and talk about how much he despises his current system, he's more than welcome to. So come on down, Elise.
I have other thoughts on that Jazz video, but we should get to our show.
All right. So some recent news notes, as we'll do each and every podcast here. Josh Young, it's just another season and another what is going on situation. Fractured wrist after getting a combo meal on Monday. He's going to be out for at least 6 weeks. It was the report on Tuesday. Josh Foscue, not the kind of grass in
playing a little too much golf, my man.
Yeah, getting ready for the majors here. Josh Foscue got the call up. Some thought maybe he'd make the team out of camp. Didn't have the great spring. He's here. I thought it'd be Ezekiel Duran's job. Well, the first day they had a chance, Josh Smith got the start at third base. It's kind of a wait and see mode, but at least we have about 5 days before Fab runs. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I really hope it's Ezekiel Duran and not Josh Smith. It sounds like, I don't know, maybe it's a platoon, but like, give Ezekiel Duran a shot. I mean, Josh Smith has zero fantasy value. I think he had 185 last year, 6 homers, like, just not there. Ezekiel Duran, on the other hand, yeah, let's look and see the rest of the week how much he plays at third base. But I think regular playing time for Ezekiel Duran is what should happen. And if it does happen, I think Duran is an excellent Fab pickup who's eligible. I don't even know where else. Outfield and shortstop, I believe.
Yes.
In addition to third base, so I'm on Duran watch. And we'll see if it happens. I don't know about your boy Foscue. I know he was technically the Angels' top prospect, but that was after Wyatt Langford, Evan Carter, yada yada. I don't see like a path to playing time, to regular playing time, to make it work. Especially because, like, I mean, even at first base, Jared Walsh is hitting.
Yep.
While Nathaniel Lowe is out,
and so. Lowe's going to be back pretty soon. So
exactly. Yeah. So yeah, Duran or bust. I think from a fantasy relevant standpoint.
Yeah, I'm with you. Smith doesn't do it for me. Foscue is Kirtland's boy, not mine, so get that right. But yeah, I'm with you on both. Like, if anything, Foscue might just platoon with Walsh at first until Lowe comes back. Right. I don't see it even mattering. It comes down to Duran versus Smith, and I hope it's Duran, like you said, because definitely some fantasy viability on that one. Just a little update for those that might live under a rock. Blake Snell, it's official, will return on Monday to the Giants rotation. He's going to throw a bullpen on Wednesday to get loose, basically like he's pitching a normal game. And he'll be ready to rock and roll Monday versus the Nats, which, if everything goes proper with the Gigantes, then Blake Snell will be a two-stepper next week, Washington and at Tampa Bay. So, got that going for you.
That is pretty sweet. I was hoping for a return this week from Blake Snell. I put him in there, and I know you texted me the update close to lock. My only other option was the injured Paul Sewald. So taking a zero there, which for this week, I don't know. Taking a zero pitcher, it's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world either. Louis Varland owners might agree with me this week.
Yeah, there's a few that can get in line on that one.
Do you know if Snell, as the Giants guy, will he be stretched out enough on that Monday start to
qualify
for a win? I mean, it's the Nats. He doesn't pitch in deep in the games anyway, but
I'd imagine he's around at least 85 pitches, if not 90, I'd hope, at this point, because originally, that's why we were texting, originally he was supposed to come back Wednesday against the Dodgers. So they must have felt like stretching them out more instead of putting them up against, leading the land of slaughter type thing. Like, why get loose against the Dodgers when you can get loose in a bullpen and then come back versus the Nats? Kind of makes sense. So I'd imagine he's around 85, 90 pitches. Like, he should be good. But time will tell. And if he's walking the farm, we're all screwed.
So, starting him no matter what, either way.
Yes, you're starting the two-step. Because even if he's not fully stretched out Monday, that start against Tampa Bay, homecoming, exactly. It's in Tampa for Blake Snell. He won't miss that at all. So that should be a fun one for sure. Tyler McGill, Siler, that didn't last long. He's on the IL with a shoulder strain. I guess the good news, if there's good news, McGill said it's not nearly as painful as the shoulder strain he had in 2022 that sidelined him for the majority of the season. But he's definitely going to miss some time here. It's rough all around. What are you thinking on this scenario?
No, it's just very short-lived and not good news to say, oh, it's not as bad as the other shoulder injury that cost me a season. So Tyler McGill, probably RIP for this year. Christian Scott, I'm on Christian Scott watch. I know a lot of people probably are, but at some point, Christian Scott, who is a minor league pitcher for the Mets, who dominated last year, dominated in spring training, at some point is going to get the call. Doesn't look like it's going to happen yet, but this is just kind of another reminder that if you're able to stash, you know, minor league guys on your bench or whatever, if you have that flexibility, it may be like a late April, May thing. It may be a service time thing, and Christian Scott is up then. But at some point, Christian Scott will be up, and I think he's instantly worth adding. So the sooner you can get him and stash Christian Scott, I think the better. It's coming. We just don't know when.
Yeah, it should be coming, because right now it's like, if you look at RotoWire, they have Vasile pitching this weekend, Lucchesi next week.
It's bad.
Buto is who Curlin has, and Buto had a lot of okay run last year, so I could see him maybe getting some actions. But yeah, none of the three are ideal. We might as well give Christian Scott some love, which would be good in that regard.
Adrian Hauser, did you say Hauser?
No, he's got a two-step next week, though, at Atlanta. And versus Kansas City, if you want to take that one on.
How about Sean Manaea and his short
that.
Hair?
I was waiting for that. Yeah, it was opposite of the Bible. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I don't believe your little story here.
Yeah, well, that's why you went to church at a ballpark on Sunday. It makes sense. but
can't dispute that one.
I didn't go to church either because I haven't been to church in years. So we're all guilty of whatever we're doing. But yeah, Sean Manaea looked amazing. I know it's the Tigers, people will point to that, but he was doing what he did at the end of the season last year, and it was great to see with Mr. Sean Manaea. Ester Ruiz, oops, starts the season in platoon. Now he's gone. He's in AAA. They're trying to say the right things, like he can work his way back and whatnot, but I think Kotze and company are like, you know what, we got these other guys up here that actually produce more than Ruiz. Let's see what we got, but it's just a weird dynamic overall.
Dude, it's weird. Because, so Ruiz, he made the team out of spring. And I know it's small sample, whatever. But he went 3-for-8 or 5-for, I don't know, whatever. He hit .429 in, six at-bats. Stole a base. Plays defense. The A's cannot play defense. Literally had 5 errors in 3 innings the other night. I don't understand why Ester Ruiz got sent down. That doesn't make sense to me. And I'm not just I don't have any teams. I have nothing invested in this. But I just thought the whole situation was kind of weird. What did Ester Ruiz do to get sent down?
Well, you saw the conspiracy theory, right?
I did. I did see his the last dive bar wristband, which is actually gaining some momentum. Well, because it's kind of funny.
Well, he was wearing it. Brent Rooker, who's now benched for JJ Bleda.
Bleda wears it too, though. And for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, the last dive bar is an organization, I guess, that's kind of boycotting the ownership for Oakland, and it's grown to very high levels, high enough to where the players are actually wearing their wristbands. And yes, anyone who's been seen with those wristbands has been sent down, benched, disciplined. Traded,
cut. Yeah, there's a list of them. It's pretty crazy to actually see.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I doubt it, but also it's the A's, so who knows?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see.
You're cutting Ruiz in a 12, right?
Yeah, I didn't even roster him because I said it was a bad idea.
But if you had him.
I'd cut him.
I'm cutting him in a 50. I mean, you don't know when he's coming back. And already, as we're going through this rundown, there are injuries galore. So he's a cut.
All right, talking about injury galore, and stop me if you've heard this before. Eloy Jimenez is hurt again. Right now, he's not on the IL. He's quote-unquote day-to-day. They're not playing again on Tuesday. But on Sunday, Eloy hurt his abductor, something I probably have 3 or 4 layers deep on me, but it's there. And apparently he's going to try to play through it. The goal is not to go on the IL. I think we're realistic here, probably going on the IL. So what are we thinking here? Eloy already literally like three games into the season, four games in IL.
Yeah. Yeah, and like he was hurt in spring too with something else. It's always something. It's always a different like muscle.
Yep.
So like I just like I don't
create
know.
A muscle game or something. It's weird.
Exactly. You could probably try and make something up. I don't. I mean, the White Sox are a bad team no matter what, and I don't just want to kind of be flippant, but like Andrew Vaughn DH'd today, or not Andrew Vaughn. Sorry, Gavin Sheets DH'd in Eloy's place on Tuesday's game, but like we've all been there with Gavin Sheets. He's kind of a 15 team streamer in weeks that are good for the White Sox. So I don't think there's that much you can really do here. Paul DeJong hit a home run for him on Tuesday, but like
right second of the year.
Kevin Pillar is on this team. It's bad. There's I don't see a fantasy viable replacement on the bench. I don't know as much about their minor league side, but It's a disaster, man.
Yeah, there's probably not a whole lot we can do fantasy wise with this one because it is the White Sox. But moral of the story, we've seen it with Royce Lewis now. We're seeing it with Eloy Jimenez. Is don't be surprised and probably avoid the future. I don't know if you want to take a risk, go for it. But it's a pretty dicey situation, it appears. Alec Thomas of the Arizona Diamondbacks heads the IL with a hamstring injury. Apparently, it's a pretty severe injury. So we'll see how long he's out for. That has not been official, but it sounds like it's at least a month type thing for Alec Thomas, who was already in a platoon. So he's got that going for him. And they called up Jorge Barrosa, a prospect from the minor leagues, power speed guy, but not like a ton of power, but, you know, 15-15 type dude if things click. Decent batting average, but again, probably the weak side of a platoon. So what are you thinking on this one?
Jake McCarthy is interesting to me. On the strong side of that platoon with Alec Thomas out. And actually, as you were talking, I pulled up our handy dandy fab schedule preview sheet that we run through on Thursday. I actually ran it already for next week. Arizona gets six games. The first three are at Coors. That's and the nice. Last three are against St. Louis. All three righties. Steven Matz, Kyle Gibson, Miles Michaelis.
So. Matz is a lefty.
Oh, Matz is a lefty. Two out of three. My mistake. Now you're going to tell me Michaelis is a lefty?
No, they face. I'm seeing three lefties and three righties next week. Right okay. Now.
All right. He's interesting in that aspect, McCarthy, because I mean, the stolen base, we saw what the stolen base upside could be 2 years ago with Jake McCarthy. Yes. Last year was a bomb. Which version of the McCarthy is the ultimate one, probably somewhere in the middle. But in good spots where Arizona faces right-handed pitching, I think McCarthy's a good streamer, and I don't think Barrosa. I just don't think there's enough playing time. I mean, I'm thinking of cutting like Adam Duvall in a short side platoon. So pretty much anybody in a short side platoon like Barrosa is not rosterable in 15s.
Basically, what I'll say is if we see the rest of this week that it's still a straight up platoon with McCarthy and Barrosa. Barrosa is interesting for two out of three in Coors to start the week. After that, probably nothing worth really getting excited about. But that would be my literally a stream for the two games in Coors and walk away scenario is the way
against,
I look at
against
it.
Against terrible pitching in Coors. Yes. I think you were talking before the show that you were saying the Rockies have a double-digit ERA
yes,
on the road. Brutal.
And yeah, I have not played in Coors yet. That is pretty impressive stuff from the Rockies. Not sure if impressive is the right word here, but Royce Lewis is going back to the IL with a quad strain. Literally first game of the year, hits a home run, and then he hits another hit, goes first to third. Oopsie, quad strain. Again, not great here. We're talking at least a month, maybe two for him. Could be more. Nothing's official yet, but at least a month is what we were told with Royce Lewis. Austin Martin was recalled, but I think one of our favorite DC guys is going to be getting some serious playing time pretty soon.
Willie Castro? Kyle Farmer?
Both, but Castro for sure. Yeah, Castro barely benefits, yeah.
Yeah, Castro started third base on Tuesday against a right-hander with Kepler, Buxton, and Matt Wallner going in the outfield. I think it's Willie Castro who just totally has regular playing time. I kind of wish Kyle Farmer gets his way into the mix. Might take another injury there. I don't think Austin Martin is getting enough playing time to warrant a bid. He used to be I think he was a former top five pick.
Yep, from the Blue Jays.
Yes.
Came over in the Barrios deal.
But I checked before the show the Baseball HQ Top 100 prospect list, which is a fantasy-centric list from before the season. Austin Martin is not even on that list. So, again, not a prospect guy. I don't know the details of what happened there, but I'm not that excited. Well, Willie Castro if he's available.
I remember last year at FPAS, Martin was in Arizona, and that panel that starts out every Friday morning or so with like the prospect analysts that are up there and the scouts that go over all the relevant FPAS players, they got to Martin and there wasn't very many kind words about the approach of the plate. There's just a lot of things he needed to improve on, basically. A wooden bat wasn't good to it. Like, there's a lot of things apparently. So maybe it'll change. Still young. Like, talent is talent. It's more, I guess, refocusing it to the major league level, but we'll see. Justin Steele to the IL with a hamstring injury. Looked like he was a soccer player when it happened. Went down. It was rough. He's probably going to be out for a month. Expect him back in May if all goes well in that scenario. Ben Brown got called up his first outing. Not great, Bob. So what are we thinking here? Javier Assad made a start on Tuesday. Looked good, but hashtag Rockies. So how are we feeling about this?
Yeah, the Steele news sucks. Somewhat of a silver lining. There was a beat reporter, somebody tweeted out a video of Steele throwing from flat ground, long toss, like in his pitching motion, I believe on Monday. So that's at least a good sign that he's throwing and the hamstring is good enough for him to do that. But yeah, it sounds like he's totally ruled out for April. It's just when in May. You know, if it's early May, that's awesome. If it's Memorial Day, like, it's tough. You're holding on to Justin Steele either way. I think he's really good, and he was shoving before before the injury. Not quite to the level of your Shota Imanaga.
Nope, not quite that weekend.
That was impressive, but
chef's kiss.
Yes, that was sweet. Ben Brown, I'm not that interested in. I know he's got some prospect pedigree, as they say, and a killer strikeout rate, but also a killer walk rate. I can't take someone who has a 16% walk rate in AAA. In 2023. It's just for me, it's a no-go.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And he didn't even start it. I believe he came out of the pen. If you look at the projected starters this week, like I said, Assad started on Tuesday, and we've talked about him in the past. He's more of a pitch to contact guy. And next week he's got at San Diego and at Seattle. Seattle's striking out a ton right now. I still don't think I can stomach that. But and then on Wednesday, you'll probably, when you're listening to this, lefty Luke Little, who I know little to nothing about, is making the start. So nice. They're trying to piece it together right now, because next week they Drew Smyly returns next week. That just tells you where this situation is right now.
Yeah. I think Drew Smyly threw on Monday. Yeah, he threw 19 pitches. Ben Brown threw 14. It's going to be like bullpen games, piece it together. Ben Brown threw 44 pitches, 1 2/3, 2 walks. Like, yeah, there's nothing here. Maybe Assad. I mean, The Assad is probably a facade, but you at least get the two step, and that at Seattle next week is pretty good based on my in person scouting eyes. What we saw on Sunday, it was pretty rough.
Yeah, I remember streaming Assad a lot last year, last month.
You were, and I
like him. I just, you guys need to realize real quick, there's a lot of pitch to contact there, and dancing tight ropes. Don't watch his starts. It's the best thing I can tell you. Do not watch them. But just hope it ends well. A constant theme here is some guys that get injured a lot, getting injured again to start the season. So this one's Nick Senzel, and this is just like the most Nick Senzel thing to me. Broke his thumb taking ground balls pregame opening day. That's just like the ultimate WTF moment. And so he's out. They called up Trey Lipscomb, who – I was looking at his stats when I wrote about him the other day. Some power, some speed, super young still. But you have some more interesting stuff here, because the more I've paid attention to people, there's some very good optimism. Marty has a home run and a stolen base in his first three games with the Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, any kind of prospect stuff, I just lean on the Baseball HQ call-up report. We do a call-up report for every prospect that gets called up every day, and it's super useful. Lipscomb was Washington's number 15 fantasy prospect, like kind of just a guy. I don't think this early power speed thing is going to last. Hit 284, I think, last year in the upper minors, which is nice, but doesn't have the at least the scouting chops to warrant a bid. I wonder, man, do you remember like my favorite dude last year, Jake Alou?
Yeah.
What happened to that guy?
He was playing the outfield for a while, but he was originally a third baseman. Like, I know that's where you're headed with this. So that does have some legs, I would say.
Yeah, too bad we're not. Too bad draft and hold season is
long gone.
Long gone. So I don't know. Long just made gone. Me think of Jake Alou. I don't know why, but
well, he was that, one of your boys. He
that's
was
my value add to this news item here.
Well, it's like if you really want to get weird with the Nats, which you probably don't want to, but like Lipson's getting the run right now. But it made me think about it because you mentioned Alou, who is a good one, of course. If you go but deeper into their system, I think they actually got rid of him. Yeah, now I'm blanking on it. What was the big-time prospect we all thought would finally do it and never did, and they finally got DFA'd? Do you remember
Carter by chance? Keboom?
Yeah, Keboom, Carter Keboom.
He's still there.
He must be in the depths. He's not even on the 40-man roster I'm looking at.
He's somewhere. Yeah, he's in AAA with Alou. He's
okay, so he got off the 40-man now. That's even funnier. That's how far that fall has taken place.
Yeah
I like the Alou call.
I don't even know if I do. I just like throwing out a cool name.
Hey, if we're going to get speculated on deep leagues or in only leagues, that's where you kind of look in those directions, I guess, you know.
Yep.
But all right, so that'll wrap up our news and notes. Hopefully it's not always that injury-bound, but from experience, it will be. So get used to it. It's just the way things work these days. And let's talk Bloom Boards, Bloomfield. Let's talk Bloom Boards. Tell me what you got going on this week. I'm looking forward to it because it might point to why some guys sucked so much over the weekend.
Bloom Boards are back. So so the plan is for every Tuesday during the season, we're going to kind of go with this format. News/injuries, and then some type of Bloom Board or whatever I can concoct that week, and then we'll do listener questions. It's a tough week to do any sort of meaningful player analysis. I mean, that's the disclaimer for what we're going to talk about tonight. Like, it's literally been 4 or 5 games, if you count Tuesday. Some have played maybe 5 or 6. So take all of this with a grain of salt. But I think one thing that is noteworthy, important, once we can add and what we'll do tonight is obviously add context to some of these names that show up on the board, is look at pitcher velocity. Like, if you're looking at one start, you know, I might look at fastball velocity and be interested in certain guys who gain to a certain extent and be a little bit worried about some guys who have faded. There are caveats galore. Like, maybe some guys are still ramping up from spring training. Maybe it's, you know, cold weather, Chicago. I know a lot of the Chicago games, people are bundled up and that sort of thing. Again, did not affect Imanaga, all that sort of stuff. But I think it's at least notable to bring up the highest gainers and the furthest faders for fastball velocity. And that's what we've got on the board here. In green, we have our 15 highest fastball velocity gainers from their first start. And on the right, the 15 furthest faders. So I'll let you kind of drive and take us where we want to go on certain guys. We don't need to talk about all of them, and a lot of them, it's just one start. But I think some of these guys, there's a little bit more to it.
Yep, there is a little bit more to it. And you said the cold weather could be a factor. Well, Kyle Freeland was in a dome in his first start, so yeah, he just stinks.
Yeah.
He's the highest gainer on the fastball velocity from 88.8 to 92.3. Not sure what Tuesday night showed, but it did show a lot of home runs for the Cubs. So he was consistent in that regard. But we don't really need to talk about Freeland. I just thought that was funny, the highest gainer, and that's why it's early data. A lot of things can change, but one that we can talk about is Max Fried, who is the second highest one here, 94 to 96.9. And Fried did not get off to the best start to the season, one might say. 2/3 of an inning, 3 earned runs, 1 strikeout, 3 walks. Also, the sample size is even smaller, basically, with Max Fried, because he didn't get through an inning. So let's keep that in mind with the velocity bump. But I don't know. Is there any takeaways from the Max Fried start? Because it was the Phillies in Philadelphia. That's always an issue, but it was brutal, to say the least. Faced 7 batters.
Yeah. And I believe on the I believe it was the RotoWire Sunday night podcast, Jeff Erickson and Scott Jensen were talking. They watched. I did not watch the start, but it sounded like Fried should have gotten out of that inning through like a pitch right down the middle on a with two strikes and was not called. Like everyone started walking off the field. And yes, in one outing, like something like that can make a huge difference. But I don't want to see a jump in fastball velocity for Max Fried, especially given the forearm issues that we saw from him last year. I already had health and workload questions over Max Fried. To go up 3 miles an hour, like that sounds good. Sounds like a good thing. And maybe for some of these guys, it is. I don't know for Max Fried if it is. If I have Fried, I would actually like to see him tone it back a little bit, because what you're getting, what you paid for with Max Fried is him making it through a season, going back to the guy he was a year or two ago. And I don't know if he can do that throwing 97.
So, well, on the bright side, it wasn't a workload thing. So you got that going for you. But now that you mentioned it, I remember seeing it all over Twitter. It was a horrific non-strike call in that at bat. So
it was bad. Yeah, I did see the highlight. It was like literally down the middle of the plate.
It was on a tee. It was bad, really, really bad. Let's talk Mackenzie Gore here, because he upped it to 97 from 95 from last year. Got a bigger sample on this one as he went 5 1/3, faced 25 batters, 3 earned, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts from Gore. You know, you look at the overall stat line, it's not bad. It's not like ideal by any means, but it's a decent line from Mackenzie Gore. What are you thinking when you see this increased velocity from Gore?
Yeah, so I can't say what I just said about Fried and not apply that to Gore, you know, who has had injury issues throughout his entire career and workload concerns. I did watch a lot of the Gore start. Control is still a little iffy. Threw a first pitch strike to fewer than 50% of the batters that he faced. You want to see that up near 60-65. So the control is still a little iffy, but yeah, only walked 2 guys, 6 Ks against Pittsburgh, so grain of salt there. But I thought Mackenzie Gore looked good. And if he can hold that 97, I think when you draft, unlike with Fried, if you drafted Mackenzie Gore, like a good second half would be icing on the cake. But I think you're kind of trying to just bank good first half stats from him, and whatever happens in the second half happens. I think Mackenzie Gore could be plenty effective if that heater stays at 97.
Yeah, I'm with you. If Gore's at 97 and he can limit the walks, I really like the idea of a big season for Mackenzie Gore. I know it seems pretty simple stuff, but we talked about him a lot in the preseason when we did our SP stuff, and we both had some optimism behind Gore. And if we can continue that development, I'd be a big fan, let's say, of that scenario taking place. Ryan Weathers took the spot of one of the many injured Florida Marlins, or Miami Marlins, man, I'm old, on the rotation. And he had like a mixed bag start, went through 4 innings, couple runs, couple walks, had some strikeouts. We saw the velo bump, as you mentioned, from 95.1 to 96.7. I was looking, he still threw 94 pitches over those 4 innings, only 34 balls in theory. Will you have any takeaways from Weathers? Because he was kind of a popular late round pick in draft season.
Yeah, because he had a good spring. He had a really good spring. And the ground balls was nice to see, the higher velo. Not to sound like a broken record, but this is someone who is transitioning from the rotate or from the bullpen. And so workload is already a concern. Typically what you see, and we'll talk about this with Jordan Hicks, your boy, a little bit later.
That's why his drop makes sense to me. I already have that conversation.
Yes, his drop makes sense. The Ryan Weathers, typically you lose velocity coming from bullpen to rotation. So I don't honestly know what to make of this. It's probably a good thing, because if you took Weathers, it's kind of a late dart slash streamer slash use him while he's good and healthy and throwing. So if you get someone like him with a mile and a half bump with the ground ball rate, if that holds, Ryan Weathers in certain spots can be, I think, pretty useful.
Yes, I'm in completely agreement on that one. I talked about earlier, I was dropping like a Griffin Canyon in certain leagues. Ryan Weathers I kept, and we'll talk to Canyon a little later. But there was at least some optimism with that Weathers deserves a few more looks, all things considered, especially we'll talk about schedules more on Thursday's show, but just like a quick glance ahead. Weathers gets St. Louis this Thursday. And then next week it's the Yankees. You know, good teams, not great teams offensively these days. So it could be interesting to see what Weathers is really made of when it's all said and done.
Yep.
Joe Ryan I don't know if I was expecting this bump, but we got it. 92-3 to 93-8, put together a solid opening outing, 5 1/3, one earned, only one walk, 5 Ks, kept the ball in the ballpark, yep. Which was very nice. Did face the Royals, was cold and all that fun stuff. But what are we thinking on Joe Ryan here? Because many have already thought he was a very getting better young pitcher. I wouldn't say established pitcher. But and there were some very, very high optimistic thoughts going around on him.
Yep. And I'm still just as high in Joe Ryan now as I was before. It's kind of weird. Like, the issue with Joe Ryan isn't his fastball. It's the secondaries. Like, Joe Ryan already has one of the best fastballs in the game from a swinging strike standpoint. It's hard to say. But what you touched on, Bubba, was the homers. I mean, that is the key for Joe Ryan. If he can throw that fastball, what goes from 92 up to 94, if that even knocks a couple homers off, I think that can do big things for Joe Ryan. I still think he needs to develop a better out pitch from a secondary pitch, but for now, like, it's a good sign. It's a good sign. I think Joe Ryan's stock is only going up from here. You're muted.
Sorry. So what happens when you start looking at other stuff and you have to cough. We've all had the optimism on Ryan. Just keep the ball in the ballpark. And if he can do that, then yeah, it could be a big boy season from Joe Ryan. I want to talk about Hunter Green. This is a guy we talked about a lot in draft season, like, you know, Great American Small Park would keep us off of him, this, that, and the other. Well, his first start, velo from 98.3 to 99.6, that's a nice bump. But he's in Great American Small Park, allowed 2 runs in 4 2/3 innings with 4 walks and 7 strikeouts. He threw 100 pitches. So obviously, obviously walks was an issue. He threw like 41 balls. Over 40% ball rate or close to it, give or take, which is not ideal. So what are you seeing with this velocity increase? Because sometimes too much velocity is not a good thing.
Yeah. And like, I know I forget the exact stat that I quoted a few, maybe even months ago on the show, but there is a very small number of starting pitchers who can hold a 98-mile-an-hour fastball and make it through not even a full season, but get to triple-digit innings. Yeah. And Hunter Green is one of those guys, or has been one of those guys, but to go from 98 to 100, like, I don't want to see that. And honestly, it doesn't really matter. It's the ball rate and the walk rate. That is, I mean, if you cannot walk guys like that and not throw strikes in Great American Ballpark, I mean, that was the concern for both of us with Hunter Green entering the season. And this, you know, this one tick of fastball velocity does, for me, nothing to change what I thought of him going into the season.
Yep, I'm with you there. I still think he's the same guy because it's either long balls or walks. It always seemed like you'd rarely have a clean both in an outing. Yep. And it just, yep, just muddies the waters where you're taking him in your drafts. Let's talk about Garrett Crochet. He went from 96.3 to 97.6 in his first start, where he went six innings, 1 run, 8 Ks against Detroit. And then on Tuesday night before the show, he goes and shoves 7 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 8 Ks. He has 16 Ks, 2 earned runs over 13 innings. Tonight was against the Braves, by the way,
yes,
where he looked filthy. Like, I sat him everywhere I had him, because I'm not even embarrassed. Like, that was the move I would have made 10 out of 10 times. Not expecting this kind of start. My question for you, though, Ryan, is you've kind of already hinted about certain pitchers maybe not wanting to increase. This is Crochet's first trip to the rotation. There's going to be an innings limit. They're stretching him out. Is increased velocity the best thing for Garrett Crochet?
I don't know. Like, yeah, so the dude, Crochet, threw 26 innings last year.
Yeah.
He did not pitch in 2022, already, and he threw 54 innings in 2021. So, like, it's an awesome run. You ride this while you can. Like, I'm sure, Bubba, you are starting Garrett Crochet next week because, yeah, you know, based on what he did against Atlanta, of all teams, today, I don't see it. Like, I don't think this is someone you trade for or buy high just because, yes, like, the run might be really strong for Garrett Crochet. But man, there's like zero track record and workload over the last two seasons. So maybe you get like 80 to 100 innings out of him, best case. And that'd be awesome. Like, that would be absolutely awesome. And kudos if you jump the gun and roster Garrett Crochet. And this is the problem, if Crochet's still available, like, that fat price is through the roof. But no, I'm excited for Crochet. We look really good today against Atlanta. Caught some of that start. It's just, how long does it last? I don't know, but I'm skeptical.
Well, it's crazy because Crochet, I think, was originally supposed to pitch tomorrow. So now he has a two-step this week. He's got Kansas City on Sunday. So now it's really making it hurt that he sat on the bench, because next week would have been at Cleveland and versus Cincinnati. I can do that. Nah, now it's just a one start next week. That's freaking awesome. But all right, let's talk about another one here, though. Bailey Ober. Ober and out. Ober and out is all I have to say. I was obviously busy doing stuff, saw the stat line, and just kind of puked in my mouth. Inning a third, 8 runs, 3 home runs, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. Still threw 53 pitches in that damage, which is like kind of efficient, all things considered. Velo was up from 91.3 to 92.4.
Yeah, talk about a silver lining.
And we were talking before the show. I heard Eno talk about it on Rates and Barrels. One of the worst stuff pluses of the first five trips through the starting rotation. Bailey Ober was one of them. This is not good, Bloomfield.
And Ober was one of the top risers late in draft season. Yes,
big time.
And I mean, I understand why. One whiff, the whole outing. I know it was just like over an inning, but I don't know. You just hope it's I have no groundbreaking news or wisdom on Bailey Ober. You just hope it's a one outing thing. Bailey Ober is just fine sitting at 91. He can do other things. He has deception with the extension that he gets. I don't know. You just kind of hope that you chalk it up to one bad outing. It happens. Like, it would be a blip if this happened in July or August, but it wouldn't be like the talk of fantasy. So even the best guys, that happens too. I just hope. So I'd be really worried if the velocity was down 2 ticks for Bailey Ober and he got rocked. So if anything, this is, I guess, a smidgen of good news that hopefully it was just one bad day at the office.
The goofiest thing in my brain, and people can laugh if they want. First thing I thought of was like, man, I can't wait to do that Bloom board in like 2 months where we get to drop one start and see what their numbers look like.
That's coming.
Bailey Ober is going to be on that bad boy. I have a feeling.
Hopefully.
Yeah, good point. That's like the first thing that popped into my head. I'm like, that's when you know you've done too many shows with you.
That'll hit. Usually, early mid-May, something like that. It's deep enough into the season where there's like, you're not cherry picking too much, but it's early enough to where one bad outing like makes a huge difference on your ratios. Yeah, Bailey Ober's ERA he could pitch well from here on out. His ERA, season long in ERA, is going to look ugly for quite a while.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was Mr. Zola. I mean, let me find this tweet because it was pretty much Bailey. If Bailey Ober throws 170 more innings with a 3.6 ERA this season, Bailey Ober will end the year with a 3.99 ERA. Yep. 170 more innings
over a full season. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy.
So he's got to be next to perfect to be a sub-4 ERA the rest of the year. So just know that now. Like, it's only going hopefully one way from here. Chris Sale's a fun one because this is a name, a player we've talked about a lot. Velo's up a whole mile per hour, 93.9 to 94.9. Looked good, 5 1/3, 2 earned, 7 Ks. We don't talk a lot about it. I'm just pretty pumped to see. Went 5 1/3, got the strikeouts, looked good. Velo's up. Like, I'm happy with everything with Chris Sale.
Yep. All systems go. I was trying to find his velocity. Sale in 2022 had a fastball velocity of 94.9. So this is almost, it's the exact same. So he's right back to where he was in 2022. So I think that's a great sign for Chris Sale. That's something that this board doesn't capture, right, is like in Sale's case, with all the injuries and whatnot with him, I know he had shoulder issues last year, like, the velocity was down for him. So it's nice to see. This isn't really an uptick in velocity. It's more of Sale going back to who he was before. So that's a good thing.
Yep. It's a very, very good thing. The last guy I was going to mention before we go to the other side, unless you have anybody else, is Shane Bieber. I know it's been well discussed, but went up a full tick, 91.3 to 92.3. 11 Ks against Oakland in his debut. Was looking fantastic against the Mariners again on Tuesday night. And we said it, everyone said it, if he can keep velocity back up, Bieber can be a dangerous pitcher. Hashtag he went to driveline. Yeah, he looks good. He looks real good, and I'm kind of mad at myself for not getting on the train.
Same. He was one of those, Bieber, we were both off of him in draft and hold season, but it is a kind of a lesson learned, and who knows, maybe he gets hurt next week or whatever. When you see some of these guys, I know for me, Nate Eovaldi was this guy last year. When you see him healthy and throwing strong in spring training, you need to be able to kind of take that preconceived notion away and move someone like Bieber up your board. It was really nice to see. This isn't really an uptick for Bieber. This is what he was throwing 92-3 all spring and at driveline. One last name, Bubba, that I want to throw out is Gavin Stone. I know you probably skipped him because he's a Dodger. But are they losing?
Giants are losing, yes.
All right. So you're looking up there. Gavin Stone's up from 94 to 95.4 and pitched really well in his debut against St. Louis. 85 pitches, 6 Ks, 1 walk over 5 innings. Good number of ground balls as well. Most importantly, Gavin Stone, this is someone who a year ago everyone was just all over. Everyone loves some Gavin Stone, and pitcher prospect growth is not linear. We know that. Same for hitters. This is someone who could absolutely break out given what the prospect folks think of Gavin Stone. Plus, he's got a spot in the LA rotation. The velocity's up, and he looked really damn good in his debut. So I'm very excited to see what Gavin Stone does. I know you aren't as much, but he was exciting.
Nope, I was on board with people saying, you know, Gavin Stone helium that started creeping towards the end of draft season, because it was the perfect example of big time prospect everyone was excited about was not good last year, and why are we giving up on him type thing when he made improvements, looked better. So it's one of those that shouldn't be as shocking. We'll see. It's only one start, still get 3 runs in those 5 innings, but there was a lot of pluses, like you mentioned, to maybe point him in the right direction.
Yep.
Now we'll head to the decliners in my mind. And this is the list that's kind of more concerning to me than the guys that rose in velocity. Like, we want the uptick guys to stay upticked. These guys that fell, if they don't rebound, it's very scary to me. And we'll start with AJ Puk, but this is kind of a reliever's velocity, went to starter's velocity thing in theory. But I just want to bring it up because he dropped almost 3 full ticks on the miles per hour. And we saw 6 walks with AJ Puk, only 1 strikeout. 4 earned runs over 2 innings. He had a 7.4% swinging strike rate. He was fooling nobody, like nobody. So what are you thinking here on Puk? Because there's a lot of fun little, you know, quips I could say right now that's probably not safe or appropriate for our show.
Yeah, man, I got Puk on a few teams and made me want to say something that rhymes with it. So
it was easy. It was easy clickbait.
3 miles. The velocity drop I expect. That's fine. It's the control. He looked, he had no idea where the ball was going. He had no idea. And again, maybe it's just first start jitters, whatever. I actually still have AJ Puk active in week 2, which may be quite stubborn of me. I think it's a good matchup. I think it's the Angels.
Should be. Yeah, they're playing the Angels right now. So, yeah.
So we'll see. But
yeah, it's the Angels tomorrow. So you'll know it's a day game, too. So
yeah. Have fun. So as people are listening to this and AJ Puk. Jeez, that's going to look smart. Just think of me. Pour something out for me while you listen to this and AJ Puck's on the mound. But no, far more concerned about the lack of control with AJ Puk, for sure.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. We don't need to go into Jordan Hicks. We talked about him a lot, but the decrease from 100.3 to 98.1, I fully expected probably a little more, honestly, to tell you the truth. But he looked great. He looked absolutely amazing. Yep. I'll take the two and a half drop.
So, it's a great, and this is why, like, we talk through these boards, because it's not as simple as good, high velocity is good, low velocity is bad. Got to add context to this. Jordan Hicks is making a concerted effort to go deeper into games as a starter. It makes total sense for him to do what he did.
Yep. You can't throw, like you said earlier, 100 all game long, all season long. It just does not work. And Hicks is going to prove, hopefully, he does this over and over, and I can sit there and, you know, twirl my pen later in the year and be like, told you, but we'll see how that goes. Kenta Maeda is one I want to talk about. He went from 91 to 88.9. It's a 2.1 mile per hour decrease for Kenta Maeda, and it was ugly. 3 1/3 innings, 6 earned runs, 3 home runs, 1 walk, 2 Ks, an 8.5% swinging strike. It was brutal across the board, Ryan. So what are you thinking when you saw that? He gave a 21.4% barrel rate.
Yeah. I mean, that I'm not really that worried about, whatever. But, like, yeah, I don't think Kenta Maeda can live 89. Like, I don't think that the splitter loses a ton of effectiveness when the fastball is like that. But really, it's the fact that Kenta Maeda is, what, 36 years old and has had injury issues recently. It's that context that we add on to a 2 mile an hour drop in Maeda's debut. And I'm very, very worried. Again, maybe just ramping up. Was that start in Detroit? I don't know. I don't think it was, but maybe not a cold weather thing, but I don't know. It's certainly not a good thing. If Kenta Maeda stays under 90, he's, I think, tough to start.
Yeah, he's very tough to start. A lot of it, like you said, age, injury concerns. Like, we were talking just a few weeks ago. It's okay, you draft Kenta because you want like 100 good innings before he gets hurt.
Yep.
We might have hit the wall already with Kenta. We'll see. Maybe he's the old pitcher, like a Zach Greinke stuff. We've seen this before too. And then he starts, you know, going to get another start or two. Who knows? But seems a little risky, a little dicey.
It was at home. It was in Detroit against the Murderers Row Chicago White Sox.
Didn't stop Jack Flaherty from dealing in the cold weather.
My man.
All right, Tristan McKenzie. This was an interesting one for me towards the end of draft season. Like, so cheap. What are we doing? This is interesting. Velo dropped close to 2 miles an hour, around 90.5 on his home opener here. We saw 3 1/3, 4 earned, 2 walks, 2 Ks. This is a guy that barely pitched last year. He had one good start, then one start he couldn't find the strike zone again. Like, there's a ton of questions surrounding Tristan McKenzie. And then to see even the spring starts were kind of a roller coaster ride of emotions for Tristan McKenzie. So I don't know. He just doesn't seem like he's back at all to me, but maybe I'm just overgoing this one.
Yeah. I mean, tough to conclude after one start, but yes, for all those reasons that you said, like, it's very much a concern if Tristan McKenzie is only throwing 90. Let's see if he ramps it up. But yes, the baseball forecaster box on Tristan McKenzie ended with lingering arm issues like this have ticking time bomb vibes. Mm-hmm. And the opening start for McKenzie is only ticking that clock even further.
All right. Now, we talked about these decreases. Like we just said, the whole Kenta thing and other ones. Let's have a fun one here. So Zach Gallen dropped nearly 2 miles per hour in his first start. He went 5 innings, only 1 run, 3 Ks. Arizona was crushing Colorado in that game. Everyone's concerned about Gallen's workload from last season, and rightfully so. If you add on the postseason, it's almost like 250 innings or something. Crazy. It's a lot of innings. But on Tuesday night, 6 innings, no runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks. It's called maybe he – I don't know. It's one of those where you don't get overly concerned maybe, or maybe this is just a good start the second time through. How are you reading into this one? Because it feels like Gallen's just an older pitcher that just wants to get his innings in at times.
Yeah, probably. I was concerned. I still am concerned about the workload. Because he threw, 33 innings in the postseason?
I think it's like close to 250, 245, something like that.
Yeah, so like coming off that, and Gallen does have some injury issues from the past. It's been a little while. So that's just kind of like a yellow flag. I'm trying to look up. So he did pitch well tonight against the Yankees, like you said. He was at, according to StatCast, 92.2.
So barely up from his last start.
So what was he in his last start?
91.8.
Okay, so
0.4.
So still down a tick and a half, but I don't know. I mean, Zach Gallen can pitch. That is, he has shown that. I do wonder if he can be as effective if it's down. If that night, there's a big difference between 94 and 92. So
yes,
we'll see.
Big time. So we'll see.
That was you're the not doing. I mean, you're not doing anything about it, right? Like, you're still starting Gallen, and I don't know.
You're starting them and crossing your fingers that there's nothing serious surrounding this situation.
Yep.
Griffin Canning, not good. Not good. 94.7 to 92.9. So we got nearly a 2-tick difference. Faced Baltimore, good team, no doubt in that. But 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 1 homer, only 2K. So he wasn't fooling anybody, really. No massive whiffs or anything like that. He was just surviving to get to 5 is what it felt like. that ticks is rough because we were talking about him all preseason, and he had that really good run midseason, and it fell apart again towards the end. And it looks like he's still on that falling apart time of life.
Yeah, we were listening to this game on the radio on the way up to Seattle, and it wasn't just five innings. So this is also why I have a freaking bone to pick with Ron Washington. He got through five, went back out for the sixth.
Oh, even better.
And it did not go well. So there is that if you want to look at kind of the glass half full side, but still just the two strikeouts for Canning. And I would believe that's a direct result of him going from basically 95 down to 93. So I don't like it. I think we were talking before the show that you cut Canning in your 12.
Yep.
So that's, you know, if people are wondering, I'm holding onto him in 15s, but I do think that's kind of the drawing line. I think even if 12 is like, if you have room to keep him, that's fine.
Yes.
See what happens in the next couple starts. But definitely a concern if Griffin Canning cannot get back up to 95 with the fastball.
Yeah, let me clarify. I was not rage dropping him. It was more of a roster construction thing. And at 12, Canning's closer to a stream than a full-time you're going to start every week guy. So a 15, you can probably justify the conversation where that's one to let the listeners know. It wasn't like, oh, he got blown up, cutting him, gone. See ya.
I want to see what a rage drop looks like. I've heard that term a few times. Like, do you just like angrily press your phone and flip the finger as you hit drop?
You know how I do my fab. I don't have enough time to rage drop unless it's Saturday night and the kids asleep. There's like no
a few noons in, just going at it with your drops.
Yeah, I look like that gif of typing on the keyboard all hard. That's your rage drop for you. So
always wonder what that looked like.
Yeah, I bet you there's some other people we could hit up on Twitter that have. Let me ask Kirtland. Kirtland might have rage drops. There's a good chance he's in that ballpark. All right.
Just headbutts his phone to hit the drop.
He talks to it and the phone runs away. Tanner Bibee, he was at 94.9 last year, down to 93.3. And I only mention this because 4 innings, 3 earned, 5 walks, 4 strikeouts. It's another pitcher with decreased velocity and the walks went high. Like Bibee had a couple starts last year where he had some serious walk issues, but otherwise the walks really were kind of kept in check for Tanner Bibee. That was a very important discussion point for me, but this velocity down after everything I described all preseason about what can make him better, he can't lose velocity to be better. That just is not a thing he can do. It's just five, so not good at all.
Yeah, and it's really the double whammy of the velocity and the loss of control. Like I don't really want to go there, but like that is an indicator that like something's wrong. Yep. Something's wrong. So too early, too premature to say that with any kind of confidence, which is something in the back of my head. Tanner Bibee's fastball, and I remember you talking with Nick Pollock about Bibee. He was not as high. Nick was as you and I on Mr. Bibee, and it was because of the fastball. Bibee does have two great secondary pitches, so you can kind of work around not having a good heater to an extent. But if you don't have a good heater at 95, you have a bad heater at 93. And so it's just hard to get to those secondaries and make it work. So, we'll see. Like, I still have Bibee active in labor in a 15-teamer, just hoping it was just a one-off. And the Oakland addition to that puzzle is also
that helps a ton. That helps. That might be called what they call in the game a get-right spot.
Yeah. No, his start was against Oakland. It was terrible. I don't know who his next start is, but.
Well, Cleveland, they're in Seattle right now.
Yeah, so probably is the Mariners. Yeah, that's looking like a get right spot.
So far so good in the Seattle front.
Yeah, so but we'll see.
Let me see. Let me double check before I lead people astray when they listen on a Wednesday. Bibee, Minnesota at Minnesota.
Oh, so it's right after.
Yeah.
Right at after Minnesota. The Seattle trip.
Yep, that'll be an.
I mean, you throw it. You throw it. I think you throw it.
Oh yeah, you do. Minnesota's not. You know, Royce Lewis is gone for crying out loud. Who else is going to be injured by then? You just play him. It just works. Anybody else you'd like to discuss here? Where there's a couple old boys that you kind of expect certain decreases in velocity.
There's Zach Thompson.
Michael King's interesting.
Michael King's semi-interesting, yes.
Yeah.
Because you wonder, yes, Michael King looked great in the rotation at the end of the year with the Yankees. I would have expected that he can handle a full workload. and maybe the I would like to see Michael King's velocity. I probably should have brought this up before the show. I wonder if there was a split with Michael King in bullpen Michael King versus starter Michael King last year. So maybe last year the average was 94.7. I'm just making things up at this point, but it wouldn't be surprising if Michael King was like 95, 96 out of the bullpen and more like 93 as a starter. So maybe that drop isn't as much, but I should probably follow up on that and look that up.
I might try to figure that out for you the best my dumb brain can here in a second. Yeah, we're just going to spitball here. Let's just start from August 12th on is when he kind of became a starter. This is good radio. This is what Toby used to do all the time. It was so much fun.
Think of things on the fly and
then start searching everywhere. So
that's a fair split, August. I mean, he was a starter.
It shows on Fangraphs. Like, he started basically. His first start was August 12th. His average fastball velo was 94.6.
Okay.
So pretty close. Yeah, pretty close to what you have there. 94.7. Yeah, not far off.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, that's pretty much go time, folks.
If you were distracted and didn't listen to the last 2 minutes of the podcast, you don't need to rewind.
Anything. Yep. Same dude. Spider-Man GIF. Starter reliever.
Yeah. So,
Roger Bloomfield wants to know anything on velo from Castillo. Two rough starts.
Ooh, Castillo. I don't know. Let's see. I don't know where he was at last year.
Another one.
Yeah, I think a couple runs were unearned there. Castillo tonight had an average fastball velocity of 95.1, which is a 1.2 mile an hour drop from last year's 96.3.
Is it cold in Seattle? Remember that narrative every year for Castillo?
It is typically cold in Seattle. Yeah, and Castillo, there was that narrative with him. Cincinnati is a bad cold weather pitcher. I'm not worried about Luis Castillo at all.
No, because Ryan has shares of Luis Castillo, so there's nothing to be worried about. Everybody,
I'm an unbiased. I think I only have him in tout. The league you're in, so that's that's
works even better.
Yeah, great. No, even if I had zero Luis Castillo,
I wouldn't be worried just yet. Certain guys, like I was telling you before the show, I kind of want to dig in or have someone smarter than me dig in on Logan Webb because he got hit around and. His first start, the fourth and fifth inning, he had to struggle and got through it, though. His last few spring starts were bad, so I'm wondering if there's something going on there below the surface looking at stats. So I need someone smart to portray that information for me. That'd be awesome.
Throw it out there. 91.9 with the fastball tonight for Logan Webb. 92.3 last year, very minimal.
Yeah.
Webb pumping 92 is fine.
Yeah, he just looks like he's laboring right now, so it's kind of wondering what's going on there with Mr. Logan Webb. Anybody else on this list before we take some listener questions?
No, I've moved on to Logan Webb. No, I think that covers it. I tweeted the list out before the show on Tuesday night. So if you're interested in not watching the stream or whatever, or on YouTube, you can follow along with those numbers. That'll be one day outdated, but whatever.
All right, let's do some listener questions here. You guys had a few for us, which is always much appreciated. Thomas Travato says, how worried should we be about our Tanner Bibee shares? 5 walks is not great. Well, Ryan's starting them this week.
Yeah, so you may not want to. I'm like on a 0 out of 10 scale for Bibee, what'd you put? What would you put him? I'd put a 5. Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it's like 5 or 6. We're good. Like, I'm going to keep riding them for a little bit. Like, some guys, it's maybe naive of me, and some guys just earned enough trust after, like, last season where Bibee was pretty dang good. Like, you expected some regression to be as good as he was. Just the velocity is concerning, but again, it's one star. We were already making jokes at the beginning of the show. Like, small samples, let's not get crazy. It's a lot of cold weather. Let's see if things can duplicate time and time again and see where things go. If it's a few starts in a row with Bibee, then we could open up a discussion once again. Our boy calling my shot. How long are we holding on to Rengifo? Saturday against 3 to 4 relief pitchers and one, or he sat against 3 of the 4 right-handed pitchers and the only lefty so far. Assuming he sits against Puck tomorrow, that's 4 out of 3. Is he going to be a waiver wire mascot while we wait for a Rendon Hicks injury?
I'm afraid so in 12s. I mean, you're the 12 team guy. I'm holding on to Ringifo in 15s, but it's just tough to hold on to somebody who doesn't play.
Yes.
Very tough.
I would definitely try to hold him 15s. This is a very, very team-dependent answer, and people hate those kind of answers, but there's no blanket statement on this one. In 12s, I am doing my best to hold. We all talk about you can have probably one stash on most NFBC leagues. I like the idea of stashing him because, again, you obviously you know he's our mascot. You've listened to the show. There's a 15-25 guy there if he could play. Obviously, if he's not playing the full season, it's not there, but the skill set is. And that doesn't just grow on trees on the waiver wire. And if he were to get full-time playing time and you already dropped them, that's going to be an expensive get back, which is part of the game. If you can't afford to stash him, then he's going to be a drop in a 12, so I'm trying to say. You're just holding out hope. He mentioned Hicks. He mentioned Rendon. Throw Sano in the mix. If just one of those three guys gets hurt and Ringifo doesn't come in then drop him.
Yeah, then.
But that's my. I'm just trying to say, like, that's the answer we're looking for is one of those three guys get hurt. But we didn't expect this either. So if for some reason he's not a regular at that point, then he can feel free to walk away.
We need to launch an investigation to see if Luis Ringifo like murdered someone in Ron Washington's family or something.
Yeah, I'll have to drive to LA and get with Prepis and we're gonna go talk to the Angels and have some fun with this one. But I'm personally trying to hold as long as I can. I get it. It's not feasible for everybody.
Yep. Agreed. I have teams with three or four injuries already, and he's very close to dropping there. It's going to happen. Rengifo will get regular playing time. Yep. It's just when, like, can you hold him for 6 weeks?
It's tough.
Like, that's tough.
Yeah.
You're holding, like, you're missing out on fab pickups like Garrett Crochet. Like, this is the time where, you know, you can really make some impactful fab pickups. And if you don't do that, if you don't give yourself the opportunity to do that by holding a Rengifo, again, I'm just making the case against it.
No, I get it.
It makes it tough.
Yep. I fully support it. Like, it's just literally, it's such a team by team basis when it comes to Rengifo that, I had five teams with him on it, which I don't think I do because too many listeners are in my leagues, but, it might be I only have him in 2 out of 5 because I had to drop him in 3 other ones. It's not a personal thing for me. It's more of a team thing for me. Big Tyler Black guy. He had a question earlier in the day about Rengifo. So there you go. But he also asks, is Oliver Dunn a guy? And this was a fun one because I didn't know a ton about Oliver Dunn until Garrett Mitchell got hurt. And the Milwaukee Brewers just made a complete mess of the potential situation where it felt like Frolik would go to center. Joey Ortiz goes to third. Easy peasy. But no, Oliver Dunn's getting regular playing time in the lineups versus right-handed pitchers. It's all over the place right now. So I'll let you have the floor first. Is he a guy? Because he already has 3 steals on the season.
Yeah, I think. I mean, he is a guy. I think he's just a guy, though. I think he's just a guy.
He's a jag.
He's a jag. Again, I'm going back to the Baseball HQ write up on Oliver Dunn. They've got like 2 full paragraphs on him, and it's not that appealing. And it's we have a prospect rating system basically from 0 to 10, which is like their ceiling, and then A to F, which is like their risk. Oliver Dunn is a 6C, which basically means he has a okay chance at being a major leaguer. So that's not great. So I lean on that. If you want to try and catch lightning in a bottle in a mixed league, get some bags, maybe. But I'm just surprised this question is coming from Tyler Black guy. Why Tyler Black is not there. Maybe it's playing time shenanigans, but would like to see Tyler Black up over Oliver Dunn, who 3 days ago I had no idea was a person.
Yep. I'm with you. I had no idea either. So I looked into him and 21 homers, 16 steals, 271 at AA for Philadelphia last year. That's a whole new spurt of power he's never really showcased. Same with speed. Like, the overall production just climbed tremendously this last year in the minors. So maybe he's 26, got a late start to kind of figuring it out. We'll see. I'm not going crazy because he's still in a platoon. Strong side for now, but still a platoon nonetheless. Ben Tidd, I mentioned, either give us questions or comments on things. And he just says, it looks like Freeland, Freed, Weathers, Nelson, Ober, and Sandoval should have stuck to throwing slower.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
We do not play in velocity leagues as a category.
Timothy says, and he's a very good listener of the show. He's was in one of our auction leagues. He was in that OC we streamed of mine. Really good dude. He says, the obvious question, do you keep Royce Lewis in OCs? What about 15-teamers? Oh. Such a shame I have to make that decision. Similar to Rengifo, I'd say this is a team-by-team situation, and I would hang on as long as humanly possible.
I would, too. I'm trying to pull up in 12-teamers in the RotoWire online because the injury was before Fab, right?
No, it happened last week.
Yeah, before.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Royce Lewis is 91% rostered in that 12-team NFBC format. So 9 out of 10 owners said screw it. He's actually 4% started still, which
thank you.
Not great. that's the sound of $350
getting lit on fire.
but.
The key number will be to look at this again on Monday, because this last week there wasn't a lot of Fab moves that needed to be made on such a short week.
Good point.
But where you're going is the right direction in answering this question. I'm not trying to downplay that part, but I'd be really curious to see what those numbers look like this Monday, because they're going to keep dropping each week because some people just don't have the room to hold.
Does the Royce Lewis owner have Josh Young on his team? Like, another week, a full week of games, which is awesome, is a full week of injuries. And so it's tough, man. It's tough.
Hold as long as possible. Long as possible. That's all we can say on that one, and see what you can do. And that'll do it. That's the last question, Bloomfield. So any final thoughts as we are literally not even a full week into the baseball season yet?
Yeah. No, not really. Just don't overreact. Do not overreact, people. I know we did a whole show analyzing starting pitchers in one start, but quite truthfully, what else are we going to talk about at this point? So, again, take everything with a grain of salt. We know it's a long season. It's 32 starts for these pitchers. And take it in stride. Enjoy the games. I have been enjoying a lot of day baseball, which has been fantastic. So.
Yeah, it was great to have a game on in the background recording the show once again. So that was a plus.
Been your voice still down? What are we doing?
They just lost 5-4. Just ended.
Evan
Phillips got the save.
Okay, good.
Yep. As scheduled. So it worked out pretty well. But it's good to get things back in action. We'll be back with you guys Thursday evening to preview the Week 3 Fab, talking schedules, two-start pitchers, and more, going through the sheet and having all the fun with that, plus recent news and notes. Hopefully nothing too crazy, but that'll probably happen, unfortunately, because that's baseball. But until next time, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick, and this is Bubba the Bloom, episode 122. Catch y'all next time.